Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name's Mark Billingham and welcome to A Stab in the Dark, UK TV's crime podcast that invites some of the biggest names from the worlds of crime fiction and TV crime drama to come into our incident room for a cosy natter. So far in Series 2, I've chewed the fat with Ian Rankin, Belinda Bauer, Sarah Hillary, Laura Lippman and David Simon. Yes, The Wire's David Simon. This week, we've got a shorter episode for you, and it features our man with a spyglass, Paul Hirons, speaking with award-winning American author Bill Beverley at this year's Crime Fest in Bristol. Paul, it's over to you.
Yes, thank you, Mark. And I am indeed here with CWA Gold Dagger winner Bill Beverley. Thanks for joining us, Bill, and welcome to A Stab in the Dark.
Thank you for having me. Good morning, Paul.
Is it kind of odd for you to be in the UK when Dodgers is out there now and got so much acclaim and success?
It is actually very pleasant to be in the UK. No Exit is Dodgers' British publisher, and they've done a fabulous job packaging it and getting it out. Britain's reacted far more positively than I could have dreamed to the book, and so it's very nice to be able to get here.
So let's talk about Dodgers. If our listeners haven't read it yet, could you just talk us through the premise and how it all fits together?
Sure. Dodgers is about a 15-year-old kid. His name is East. He lives in a neighborhood, a fictional neighborhood in Los Angeles called The Boxes. And East is a watchman for a drug house run by an organization that he's a part of. His uncle is the director of. East leads a gang that watches this house, that insulates it from trouble, that serves as an early warning system should the police come down the street, for example. And one morning, and East is very, very good at this job. He has never imagined really doing anything else. He's intelligent, he's watchful, he's quiet. He understands what needs to be done. One morning very early in the book, the house, however, is taken down by a overwhelming show of force by the police. They roll in dozens of cars, and there's a shootout, and the house and East's job are lost. And it is, of course, though he couldn't have stopped it, his fault. He heads in to face the music, to accept the blame and the punishment for this failure. And he's given one option. Tomorrow morning, get in a sort of nondescript van with three other young men, drive across the country, and murder a man. This is far above his pay grade. He's never engaged in that sort of work before, and he's never left Los Angeles before. But because East is, we might say, a good kid, he says yes.
Wow, I don't quite know what to say about that. That's a heck of a premise, isn't it? And it deals with kind of almost like a forgotten side of America, these urban street kids that, you know, have been kind of examining things like The Wire and stuff like that. But talk to us about the urbanness of East's kind of surroundings and how that kind of influences his life and indeed the stuff. Because you've done a lot of research into criminal justice and all the rest of it in the US, haven't you?
Well, I have. I most of my research is not is not current, nor is it sociological or criminological. I'm a literary scholar, and I did work on I did some reading in criminology, but my interest is principally in old fugitive stories and contemporary fugitive stories. The topic came to me when I was a graduate student in the 90s, and a day that was important was the day in 1994 when O.J. Simpson went on his white Bronco lamb around and through Los Angeles when he was wanted for questioning in the deaths of his wife and another man. East is a product certainly of an urban economy, an economy that we, the United States, and that most Western nations have marked out as criminal economies, even as almost indistinguishable other trades are proceeding, maybe in another neighborhood, in another zip code, utterly above board, right? I've visited, actually, Washington, D.C., where I teach and where I live about a mile outside the city limit, has just made marijuana, decriminalized it. It's not fully legal. You can't sell it, but you can, in private space, smoke it. And, of course, that is something that we've put many, many people in prison for. But now we've given moneyed interests the ability to continue to make money, to make more and more money from that industry. I think of East as, I don't think of the drug trade in America without some ambivalence and without acknowledging that it has its costs and complications. But I think of East as I think of the drug trade as a gray area in law, and I think of East as a very smart, very disciplined kid who has been a victim of any number of gray areas.
And do you see that gray area with how the states is at the moment and the political developments and what's going on in DC? I don't want to get into your, well, you can if you want, please do, but what's happening in the states at the moment, is that gray area getting bigger and larger, or is it shrinking? What's the feeling there at the moment?
Well, I think the Republicans in power have more or less announced that that they think the liberalization of marijuana laws is a great ethical mistake. They will announce that, you know, fully hepped up on mood stabilizers and Viagra, but of course, when black or Latino people on the streets, or young poor white people on the streets, are selling drugs, we're not going to have that. Yet I don't think that those federal efforts or that federal rhetoric towards strengthening drug laws begins to drum up again. I'm not sure that it can overtake the momentum both in individual state governments and on a national level that our laws have been persecutory, if they have been fundamentally unfair, and have and have wreaked havoc. I think the American public, even as it hides its head in the sand about a great many pressing problems, has begun to realize the toll we have wreaked in Colombia and Mexico, just to name two nations, as we have increased demand for the products and at the same time made criminal the production of those products and the importation of those products. I'm not sure that the effort to strengthen laws again can outpace the changing of the times.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, we could talk about that all day. It's such a complex issue, I think. And as you said, there's a supply and demand issue. There's all kinds of things going on. But let's get back to East, because he sounds like a classic, almost anti-hero, if you like, or kind of a guy that is kind of good at heart, but is in a bad situation and gets put into an even worse situation. So is Dodgers a noir story?
I don't know that it is. I don't know that it is in its character a noir story. It's also a question that we might steep for a while. There is a good amount of Dodgers that is noir stylistically. I grew up reading Kane and Chandler and admiring, you know, They Live by Night and once that toxin is in your blood, it's hard to wash it all the way out.
And you mentioned the fugitive element, and fugitive is such a popular and not common so much anymore, but a device that's been used a lot. It feels like an old school kind of device in crime fiction, the fugitive. Could you talk about your love of fugitive stories and where that comes from?
What is a better framework to build a story on than a fugitive story, right? You begin with a crime. The identification, rightfully or wrongfully, right? It doesn't really matter, of a suspect. And so a character becomes the focus of intense desire and attention at the same time that he or she tries to evade it, right? There's a fundamental conflict. There's a sort of fiction writing 101 setup. And where is that story going to go? The most mundane and pedestrian of encounters in a grocery store or along a roadside have a constant potential of menace, of a child recognizing you, of Flannery O'Connor's grandmother going, I seen you, I know who you are, you're the misfit, right? Where the whole story, you know, has to then turn. That fugitive story is going to barrel towards some sort of conclusion, which might be a, you know, it's easier to imagine the shootout, the apprehension, the decision to come back in out of the cold, than it is to imagine the alternative. What is the escape from being a wanted man? What is the paradise that one gets to in Jim Thompson's The Getaway? There is the escape to a paradise, but of course that paradise is vampire-like in its handling of the couple that get away.
And you mentioned a lot of kind of classic noir writers there, Jim Thompson's, James L. Cain, all that kind of stuff. And stylistically, you said you tried to get there with Dodgers. Are there any other writers that kind of have influenced your work at all?
Sure. I mean, I come out of a long, entirely unremarkable career trying to write short stories in the mold of Laurie Moore, perhaps, Stuart Dybeck, but I'm influenced as much as anyone by Dennis Johnson and by James Baldwin. I think they're the two greatest American stylists, and I discovered Johnson first, right, with Jesus' Son, and then his first book of prose, Angels, and I've read his work since with admiration. It took me a long time before I discovered Baldwin, who is as beautiful as Johnson is and hurts even more.
You mentioned the word paradise there, a person trying to get to their own personal paradise, whatever that might be. For someone like East, what is their personal paradise, do you think?
I don't know that East ever does, in the space of Dodgers, even dare to think of that. He is a particularly ascetic character. He lives in the, not even the basement, the sort of crawl space behind, below an industrial building in a sort of office park, just off the neighborhood where he guards his house. He has left his home. He doesn't live in a pack, in a sort of den with other boys. But he's a tremendously tense character. He watches the street. He watches for signs. And he gives a lot of evidence of being, you know, sort of chronically overstimulated by the number of moving objects that he must track, right? On a 12-hour shift, 7 days a week. And what we see him yearning for is quiet and peace, much more than any sort of materialistic or geographically specific endpoint.
Well, I think we'll leave it there, because I think that's what we're all after, a bit of peace and quiet, aren't we, after a weekend like this? Bill, thank you so much for joining me. Thanks for the time.
Paul, pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Fantastic stuff. I'll be back next week, where I'll be talking to none other than Sherlock co-creator and writer, the brilliant Mark Gatiss. In the meantime, you can find out more about A Stab in the Dark at uktv.co.uk/astabinthedark. Or get in touch with us on Twitter, #astabinthedark. Plus, don't forget to review us on your podcast app. Your feedback really does make a difference. So if you like the show, please rate and review us. Pretty please. And just a quick reminder, you can watch the best crime drama every day on UK TV channels Alibi and Drama. And thanks to our producers Paul Hirons, Joel Porter and John Lemon. My name's Mark Billingham, and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.